This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Monday, January 25th. I'm Angela Denning. Testimony in Petersburg this month on subsistence use on the Tongass National Forest focused on deer and salmon habitat and potential impacts from logging. U.S. Forest Service officials have been gathering input on a new plan for managing the nearly 17-million-acre forest, with a 16-year transition away from logging old-growth trees. Joe Vicnicki reports.
The agency in November released its draft Tongass Land and Resource Management Plan, which spells out where logging and other development is allowed on the forest. The plan reflects a unanimous recommendation by a 15-person Tongass Advisory Committee on transitioning to a harvest of younger, second-growth trees on areas that have already been logged. Only two people testified at a subsistence hearing on that plan in Petersburg. Joe Sebastian directed his comments toward that committee, or TAC.
What does a timber lopsided TAC know about salmon production on the Tongass? What does a TAC know about subsistence use patterns and needs in the Tongass? What does a TAC know about wildlife interactions and seasonal changes of forest dependency on these creatures? This sham panel of self-interested forest exploiters on the TAC is a new low for the U.S. Forest Service.
The agency is required to hold hearings on the forest plan's impacts on subsistence resources under the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act. That law provides for, quote, the continuation of the opportunity for subsistence uses by rural residents of Alaska, including both natives and non-natives, on the public lands. It also gives priority to subsistence uses on public lands in the state. Sebastian thought the 16-year transition took too long to get away from harvesting old-growth trees. He brought up the example of the Tonka timber sale, which meant logging of old-growth trees on nearby Kuprinoff Island, southwest of Petersburg.
That's going to hurt this area for a long, long time to come. Not just 1 year, not just 10 years. Probably the next 100 years, and already we're having significant restrictions of deer with a 2-week hunting season on the Lindenberg Peninsula, a 2-week hunting season on Mitkoff Island, and many people travel all the way to Admiralty Island to try to get a few deer for the winter time.
The preferred alternative in the plan would see a harvest of up to 46 million board feet annually across the forest. In the first decade, the bulk of that, 37 million, would be continued harvest of old-growth trees. The old-growth portion of the harvest would eventually drop to just 5 million board feet by the 16th year of the plan. And to compare, harvests of old growth on the Tongass over the past decade have averaged 36 million board feet a year. Karen McCullough, another person testifying, was concerned with the level of logging proposed in the plan.
One of my biggest concerns is the allowable cuttage of board feet. That market demand drives that. I would like to see the driver for that, the habitat for fish and game on the land, and I would also like to see an acknowledgement for the habitat of our huge southeast estuarine area that the forest itself is part of.
McCullough said she also wanted to see larger buffers around fish streams. Public comment on the plan is open through February 22nd. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
And there are links to the forest plan and related past stories on our website, kfsk.org, posted along with this story. The Alaska legislature gaveled in last week in the fourth session for Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins of House District 35. He represents his hometown of Sitka, along with Petersburg and 20 other rural southeast communities. In sharing his goals for the session, Christ Tompkins has a few policy ideas up his sleeve. Emily Kwong has more from Sitka.
Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins has an Excel document on his computer. It's got 3 tiers, 94 rows, and a simple title. Good ideas.
There is a whole universe of good ideas out there, and we just exist in that universe.
You could say that Christ Tompkins is on a mission to find good policy ideas for the state of Alaska, and he deems an idea as good based on 2 criteria. 1, does it make life better? And 2, is it free of charge?
my office, we have blinders on. We ignore ideas that cost money.
His staff this session includes aides Reed Magdance of Kotzebue, Barrett Wilbur of Sitka, and intern David Russell Jensen of Juneau. And the Christ-Tompkins squad is especially interested in innovative ways to save the state money. Last session, Christ-Tompkins introduced a paper reduction bill in response to what he saw as needless copies of every state agency report required by law to be printed. His office estimates that all this printing costs the state $585,000 a year.
Some of them cost like 20 bucks a copy, 15 bucks a copy, really expensive. These reports are coming to us, legislators, appropriators, the people who write budgets. So there's this like graphic design off where different boards and agencies create like holograms and translucent paper stock and like incredibly beautiful annual reports, which are not necessary.
HB 68, which passed the House last April and will now appear before the Senate, proposes a digital alternative.
So what we want to do is make the default digital, unless there's a public interest in having lots of printed copies because regular people actually want a paper copy. A good example of that being like fishing game booklets or DMV-related materials.
Speaking of the DMV, Christ-Tompkins' latest bill, HB 217, which he pre-filed for this session, puts an artistic twist on how Alaskans register for license plates.
On everyone's car is a license plate. It's one of the most omnipresent and ubiquitous pieces of government infrastructure. And so we've been noodling on the idea that you basically have an American Idol for all Alaska visual artists, drawers, painters, any kind of visual artists, graphic designers, to design a license plate and make these the most beautiful license plates in America.
The special plate Christ-Tompkins envisions would cost $50, with proceeds going to the winning artist and the Alaska State Council on the Arts, who would lead the design competition and pick a new plate every 4 years. Christ-Tompkins says he's aware that license plates won't solve the state budget crisis, but he hopes the bill will imbue Alaska with richness in another way.
This isn't like a world-changing idea, but it's fun. It doesn't cost anyone anything. It creates a connection between people and our state government.
Scrolling through his Excel sheet, Christ-Tompkins has several other active pieces of legislation. One seeks to legalize the donation of fishing game to schools, nonprofits, and senior centers. Another creates a system for language immersion charter schools. He's excited about what's possible and what will appeal to both sides of the aisle.
I don't like partisanship. I really dislike partisanship.
Christ-Tompkins is a member of the Alaska Independent Democratic Coalition, but unlike half a dozen of its members, voted for the operating budget at the end of last session. He explained why at a Sitka Chamber of Commerce luncheon last month.
I feel that conservatism is responsible and necessary. In many instances, what some people have advocated is much further than I think is reasonable, but further cuts are definitely a part of the solution.
A member of the audience then asked him a doozy of a question. Is it possible for the legislature to work together this session?
Well, last legislative session may have been the most dysfunctional in Alaska history. It will be hard to do worse than that.
As for this session, he adds, I think and hope it will be better. Christ-Tompkins will serve on the same three House committees this year, Fisheries, Education, and State Affairs. His office expense account is $1,600. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Kwonk.
The University of Alaska Southeast established a physical presence in Wrangell last year when its regional tech prep coordinator moved into an office in the local high school. The school district and the university are working to help students and adults continue their education after high school while trying to fill the needs of local businesses. KSDK's Katarina Sestarek reports from Wrangell.
UAS Tech Prep Regional Coordinator Kim Shotko says her main goal is to help local students get educated and get good jobs in their hometown. And because Shotko is now based in Wrangell, she wants to aid the community in filling its need for workers trained in healthcare, construction, and marine services.
Because UAS is really interested in Wrangell and in expanding their program so people have more opportunities with construction, with welding, with marine transportation, refrigeration and air, plumbing and heating, all of those things we need in the community and talking with different businesses. I have a whole list.
And she says Wrangell is unique because of opportunities for educating students by partnering with other organizations like the fire department, the hospital, and local businesses. Wrangell School Superintendent Patrick Mayer says this is just the beginning of the district's relationship with UAS, and it's growing.
So we're looking at how we can develop programs with certainly, you know, increased tech prep offerings in the school, but also adult ed programs in the community, and partnering with entities within the community to provide even more opportunities for students, whether they be high school students or adult students.
A tech prep course is any class taught to a high school student by a high school teacher for University of Alaska credit. The program is meant to help high school students start gaining the skills and college credit they need to continue their education after they graduate. Wrangell already offers 62 college credits in math, English, computer literacy, emergency medical technician training, mining, welding, and woodworking. For the next school year, Shotco is proposing the addition of courses for certified nurse aid training, medical terminology, fisheries oceanography, and Alaska salmon culture. Other possibilities include programming for culinary arts, health information management, criminal justice, and marine transportation. But she also hopes to start some adult education courses in Wrangell. Some courses are already available to high school students, like woodworking and welding. Additional classes might be about human anatomy, diesel engines, electrical systems, and refrigeration. That way, Wrangell residents would be able to stay in town longer while continuing their education. For example, if a health sciences program is created, students could do a 2-year pre-nursing program in Wrangell and then go to Juneau for 2 years to become a registered nurse. Shotko says that even with state budget issues already forcing cuts to public education, she thinks the health sciences program can still move forward.
Right now, the university is under hiring restrictions, and so it's kind of put a damper on things, but I think once we understand how the budget's impacting, I think that we can move past that.
At the local level, the Wrangell School District is planning to save money by dropping a faculty position after a teacher retires at the end of this year. That teacher leads a tech prep course. Mayer says the state budget will force the district to reevaluate the ways it offers classes.
I think there is ways that we can accomplish this. For example, retiring teacher, we have, computer apps class. So I think there are multiple ways we can figure out how to deliver that class, and just kind of looking at it as on a class-by-class basis to see how those can be absorbed into the schedule.
Mayer and Shotko say they're looking into grants that could help fund the expansion of adult programming in Wrangell. From her office next to the Wrangell High School gym, Shotko says she's also a local source for all kinds of information about college and scholarships.
So registering for classes, registering for programming, making applications, trying to figure out how much they owe, all of those things I can do. Scholarship information, I can help them fill out scholarships so they can come in, and it doesn't matter if they're high school or homeschool or adult students, I can help them with all of those things and point them in the right direction.
Mayer says he's seen current and former high school students getting help from Shotko from finding a path for their future to help solving a math problem. Shotko says she's talked with a lot of people in town, but she wishes more Wrangell residents would come to her for information and assistance. She also emphasizes that she can help with questions about education outside the state. The current agreement between UAS and the Wrangell School District is valid through June 2016. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Katerina Sestarek.
Following about an hour of public comment from a packed council chambers, the Ketchikan City Council voted 3-2 last week to reject an ordinance that would have temporarily banned retail marijuana in city limits. The public comment was overwhelmingly in favor of allowing a retail pot industry. Among the speakers was Councilmember K.J. Harris, who stepped down from his seat to speak at the public comment lectern. Harris stressed the financial benefit to the city.
There is a potential to make some money, not on the 10,000-12,000 people that live on this island, but when we start to develop, so maybe we have a smoke club, smoke something, where those that want to can jump off a tour ship, come in, buy enough to fill a bowl, smoke a bowl of weed, pay us $30.
Other speakers noted that the majority of voters in Ketchikan supported the legalization of marijuana when it was a statewide initiative in 2014. They objected to what they said is a disregard for the voters' will. The initiative does include a provision for local communities to opt out of commercial marijuana operations. Only one person out of the 15 who spoke asked the council to approve the ban. During council discussion of the measure, it became clear that the ordinance would not pass. With the ordinance's failure, the city of Ketchikan now faces a new task: whether and how to regulate marijuana businesses within its city limits. And finally, four homes have been destroyed in a natural gas explosion or fire following a magnitude 7.1 earthquake in south-central Alaska. Kenai Fire Department Battalion Chief Tony Pryor says explosions from a natural gas leak destroyed two of the homes. The other two were fully engulfed in flames by the time firefighters determined it was safe enough from gas for them to enter. The fire department focused on keeping the fires in these two homes from spreading to nearby houses. Pryor says there were no injuries. He says the second house explosion was major, and they are fortunate that no one was hurt in that one. About 30 homes total were evacuated in the Kenai neighborhood. Some people are staying at a shelter at the Kenai National Guard Armory. Workers with the gas utility are examining the remaining homes to determine if the earthquake severed gas lines to the homes and are establishing temporary lines with the hope displaced residents can get back home sometime today. Well, this wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. I'm Angela Denning. Thanks for listening.